If you guys don't know this guy by now, then you just haven't listened to the podcast. Jeremiah Searles joins the show. He's a former Nebraska Cornhusker, played in the NFL for a few years. Now he's an NFL agent, and he also has his own podcast. He's one of the best guests that we bring on. His vast knowledge of the space of college football and NIL and the draft, and his ability to speak well on the mic, make him the perfect guest. You're going to enjoy him as always. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Like, because they're playing the game, brush my teeth. It's like, this isn't a game. This is an activity you do. You don't play brush your teeth. Brush your teeth, and then you go do something else.
Sounds like a lit game to me.
Yeah, lit 5:30 in the morning, dark as shit outside. Go to bed.
Welcome into the podcast, everybody. I hit the record button in the middle of our conversation about children. It's where me and Searle's conversations have shifted to nowadays. Yeah.
We're just adulting hard, right?
It's turning 30 this year.
Hey, look at you.
Yeah.
Big 3-0. It's a myth. Everyone says, oh, I turned 30 and everything started hurting. That's just for soft people.
I've kind of been hurting for 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's different. It's just like, but I've always hurt. It's different to hurt at 30. I hurt at 22.
Yeah. Kevin hurt way worse at 22.
Oh, yeah.
Than he does now.
I believe it.
But I think for athletes, it's different because you're. I wish Drake would not be such a wuss. Yeah, and just join the show, because talk about hurt. That dude's just in eternal pain.
Well, I mean, he does it to himself. Like, I mean, I have a little bit of remorse for the dude. Like, you played fullback. Like, that's a very punishing position.
It's tough.
But at the same time, stop with the fighting. I don't know. Maybe stop getting kicked in the stomach, in the face. And I don't know, just a thought.
So Kevin will be here in a minute, by the way, everybody listening or watching. Comment down below why you think Kevin's always late to these.
Poor time management.
Yeah, you'd think he would have learned better. He had this ankle thing in college, right? Do you know about that?
I don't know about
the ankle. Okay. So mutual friend Ike Butker.
Love him.
I think we ran like a dive play off the left side, and Drake is lead blocking. And I think someone, you know, a D lineman runs the line down, and kind of one person falls on another person, falls on another person. Drake's leg gets caught up this is producer. That's producer stuff right there.
Oh, God.
So that's Drake's leg.
Oh, no.
And his knee in that picture is his knee is straight.
Straight. Yeah.
His ankle's not. So, serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that was against Nebraska, ironically.
Insult.
First play of the game.
It was in Nebraska, too, it looked like. White
jersey. No. That was in Kinnick.
Oh.
It was
in Kinnick. Kevin.
Searles, how we doing, man?
Phenomenal.
We're just telling the story of Drake.
Yeah, I'm hearing about Drake snapping his leg.
You haven't heard that story?
No, I have not.
I've told it like 8 times.
Yeah, just, oh, God, stop. Yeah. I don't want to look at it anymore. Yeah,
that's pointed the wrong way.
That's disturbing.
It's better than like searching Kevin Ware's injury. Remember
you
that one?
You want me to pull that up too?
Yeah, sure. Pull up Kevin Ware. Pull up the bone.
I don't know if I want to see that either.
Okay.
I would be curious to see. I have a theory that Drake would have turned into a completely different human being had he not broken his ankle.
You think a butterfly effect?
You think that was like the turning point, right? Like there was two paths there.
I don't know if that was the tipping point, but that might have been like.
Like you think he was 12 months away from the Peace Corps?
I wouldn't exactly say that, but.
Okay. The Peace Corps.
I think Drake Kulik is a very different person if he never broke his ankle.
Explain. Go deeper into
that. I'm going to press deeper into that.
Please go on.
I'm not going to go deeper into that. Maybe if I ever get on a Dickhead Tuesday with these guys, I might go in deeper than that. But I just think that was a detour from his planned route.
Deviation from the path.
Exactly. A lot. Yeah, a lot happened to Drake in an 18-month span there. towards the end of our career. Anyway, we're telling the story, Kevin, because we're talking about parenting and then turning 30 and then it, like, hurting as you get older. But then we kind of flipped it on its head and said, like, Kevin probably felt way worse when he was 22.
Like just in general body.
Yeah. Just like you wake up in the morning, like how much did you hurt versus now?
Oh, like when we were playing, dude, I felt like shit every single day.
Well, I mean, I woke up. I had shoulder surgery 5 weeks ago, my seventh surgery. Right?
Labrum or what'd you have?
Yep, get the old labrum fixed, right? It's one of those things that it had been kind of bugging me. It was an older injury. And then as I was like doing life, right, like picking my kids up or golfing or lifting, I was like, yeah, this is getting worse, right? So I went in and then I was like, that MRI, let's get the MRI. And so actually the guy that I lift with, he played football in Nebraska. He's also an orthopedic surgeon. And I was like, you know what, Dane, how quickly can you get me in and fix me? He's like, 2 weeks. And so like we scheduled the surgery before we scheduled the MRI. Cause he was like, if you tell me something's wrong, something's obviously wrong. And so we got the MRI and he's like, yeah, your shoulder's trashed. He's like, probably need 5-6 anchors, get in there, tune it up, call good. Cool. Get to the surgery. Afterwards, he's like, so was worse than we thought. 11 anchors. Basically, nothing was in there. You were just kind of holding it together by your trap. I was like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that you just kind of learn to live with certain things. But as we got closer to the end here and that NFL insurance runs out in September, decided it needed to get done.
Oh, yeah. You got to get all the tune-ups done.
Oh, yeah. Wife's getting her knee scoped out. Like, we're doing everything. Deductible is hit, man. We are anything under the sun is getting done before September 1.
Oh, man. That's funny. You said this was your fifth surgery on that shoulder?
Seventh shoulder in general. I've had two ankle, two knee, shoulder, and then I had one on my elbow.
Oh, fun. Did they detect any signs of early arthritis in there?
Oh, yeah. Osteoporosis. All right. It's all the fun stuff. You know,
not osteoporosis. You're not an 80-year-old grandma, so probably not that.
But I mean, whatever.
Osteoarthritis.
There it is. That's what it is. I just keep thinking about it. I don't know, dude. All the O words get you, right? Now I'm looking at all these people getting on Ozempic, all the fat pill, and it's like, man, that thing's kind of neat. As I watch Tyler roll his eyes over there.
Dude.
That's threatening his business over there.
Dude, can't beat a shot. You can't beat a shot that's just going to melt the fat off of you. Just saying.
You guys really don't want the soapbox on this. I'm not going to do it.
I've been waiting for this. I knew this would poke a nerve. I knew it would be like, you know, these shots now, Tyler. Like, yeah. First it was you telling me to drink water, but now I can just take a shot and once daily and I'll be skinny.
I mean, that's just easier, right?
It's just simpler. I mean,
you're right.
Shortcuts. Life's all about shortcuts, Tyler.
Yeah.
What's the saying? Shortcuts make long careers, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
As the vein throbs in his head.
Yo, low key, the veins on the side of my temples kind of scare me sometimes. The baldness really brings
when did,
it out.
When did you finally like just embrace the baldness?
February of last year.
Just went for it? Or did you just like
so
it was time?
It's funny because once you do it, you look back and you're like, wow, it was time so long ago. Right?
I feel like your life's just gotten better since you shaved your head.
It hasn't gotten worse. Mm. I'll say that. I will say this, and this is a weird conversation between the three of us, but if you polled like 100 women of the local Waukee area, my attractiveness probably went up like 1 or 2 points.
Yeah. My brother-in-law did it. My brother-in-law embraced it, but he didn't tell anyone. He just did it. Mm-hmm. And he showed up one day and it was kind of the like, whoa.
Yeah. That's kind of how I did it too. So the real determining factor was December of 22. We had our daughter and this is such an reason to do it for me to finally go over the edge. So then by February of last year, she was 3-4 months old. She was starting to get older. She recognized you, you know, their eyes start to work. Right. And I didn't want selfishly, it was about me, of course. I did not want like at 1 year old or whatever for me to have hair every day. And then someday I come into the room in the morning and pick her up out of the crib. And it's like, who's this bald guy? Right. So I was like, I'm going to do this before she recognizes that I'm like, she's only going to know me as bald dad forever.
Yeah. Just so, always know. That's fair. I can respect
it. So we went for it. And I was like, it probably took me like a day and a half to get over. And
you
ever
do
since,
like clean Bic, like get the Bic razor out and go for it. Or you just do the like, zzz?
I did the first time, but now I just have one of those skull shavers and it gets it pretty darn close to what a razor would.
There you go.
So
you ever lather it up and just try to make it look extra shiny or
no,
oil the dome.
You get like a buffer out, like a statue.
Scrub daddy, actually.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Anyway, back to the Drake story. He snaps his ankle. He's out for, I mean, I don't know, Kev, what was that recovery for him? 6 months?
I mean, yeah. I don't think he did any spring ball. And
no.
He really wasn't right.
Well, I mean, yeah, especially if it's a Nebraska game, so it was late.
Yeah, it was
November.
Yeah.
I feel like he hardly even practiced during camp the following year.
We'd have to ask him, but yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It wasn't just the one surgery fix for him. I mean, like, it bothered him, so like they went in there and like rescoped some stuff. And,
Right. So now 7 years later, he just had a surgery on it again, like a month ago, 6 weeks ago. They took out the screw or the plate that was in there, the screws that were in there. Bone had grown over it. They had to like wiggle it out. They cleaned up the some of the damage and just shredded tissue in there. And that was supposed to like make it feel better. I asked him last week if it feels any better and he's like, no. I'm like, but it feels better than like better as in you're recovering from the surgery. He's like, no, not really. He's like, I'm a little better. And I'm like, but it feels better than before you had this surgery. He's like, no. And I'm like, okay, that's good. And then he drops the bomb that, similar to you, shoulder, his labrum is, I think he has a shredded labrum as well. So
that's pretty common with fighters, I feel like, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if you MRI like half of the NFL, they would all
have. Yeah, I mean, any college football
at least player. One labrum.
Yeah, any college football player has at least a partially torn labrum.
Excluding specialists.
I mean, yes, yeah, excluding specialists. Say, yeah. Yes.
There's probably a few like long snappers out there that like tried to throw their shoulder on a tackle. And
yeah, so I mean, just for like when I got my pec done last year, part of what they're doing, they're going to go up into my shoulder and like there's a little area where your bicep attaches. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just snip that off and helps the pet repair a little bit better. And they're in there doing that. It's like, oh, his labrum shredded. We should probably fix that. I'm sure he'd like that. And so, yeah, my 1.5 hour surgery turned into a 3 hour surgery where they just ended up doing both.
Hey.
But I'm sure like Kluver, even like you lift all the time. I'm sure like if they went in there, they'd see like, yeah, your shoulders are beat up a little bit.
My left shoulder is great. It's great. I still have awesome mobility on both arms, but on the wrong day, this shoulder will catch.
Mm.
And especially with CrossFit, like jerking overhead or doing handstand pushups, I really have to like, there's a lot of mobility that has to be done if I'm going to do like a serious workout with that stuff. But yeah, Grant, how about you? How are your labrums?
You know, if I'm being honest, sometimes my shoulders do hurt because I think I sleep so poorly on them.
Fair enough.
Got too hard of a bed. Just gotta get a softer bed.
I have noticed that lately.
But we gotta get an eight sleep partner going on here. We need a mattress sponsor for this podcast.
Mm. That'd be nice. Yeah. But no, I haven't been doing any extreme podcasting lately.
Okay.
So
there you go.
Searles, did you ever come through with that Liquid Death partnership that you were talking about for
still
your
still working on it?
Okay.
Still working on it on that front. But yeah, no, we're starting. We partnered with Blue Wire on our other podcast, the O-Line Committee.
Yeah.
So we partnered with Blue Wire with them. Working with that, we have our first kind of ad people that want to join with us. So still growing that. We're not even a year old yet. So we turn a year in May. But it's been a lot of fun. The hard part's like, much like you guys, we're all super busy and all have young kids. And so we actually record Tuesday mornings at 5 a.m. For 2 hours.
There
so we go 5 to 7 every Tuesday morning. And I'm getting a little tired of waking up that early because I go lift Monday morning at 5:30, record Tuesday 5, lift Wednesday at 5:30. So like Thursday rolls around, I get to sleep until 7 and I feel like a new man.
I thought after you retired from the NFL, you're allowed to sleep in afterwards.
Yeah, I don't have three kids, Kevin, and I never get to sleep in. Like, sleeping in is now 7. Like, I was telling Tyler,
yes,
like, dude, I have these night lights in my kids' rooms that there's 3 colors: red, stay your ass in bed; purple, you can go play with each other, which goes off at 6:50, and then at 7:20 it turns green and you can come and get us. And I mean, to the minute, those kids are in my room at 7:20 ready to rock.
That's funny as shit.
Ready to rock.
Yeah, man, it is crazy once you have to have, like, because with a kid it's all about routine.
All
right, so if you're not keeping a routine down to the minute every day, like, you're setting yourself up for
disaster.
Bad news.
Yeah.
So
sounds like they're just holding you accountable.
100%.
And they are. And it is great in that way. And if you're a person who's, okay with accountability, and you learn that in your life, then you do pretty well. It's fine. But sleeping in is quite, like, my wife's alarm goes off at 5:30 in the morning or 5:40. So sleeping in quite literally, like, if we see past 6:30 on the clock, it's like,
it's a good day.
What is happening? Is our child alive? Is, like, you look over at the monitor to see if they're breathing. It's like, oh my God. It's crazy. Kev, you'll know someday.
One of these days.
One of these days.
Drake might not. He just has dogs.
He has a pretty serious girl though, doesn't he?
Yes. But at one point his stance on kids was he would like a son, but not a wife. and so then
when we pressed him on how he would get said son, yeah, not a whole lot of details behind the answer.
Big plan, not quite on the execution quite yet.
He had really no details on the execution of how he was going
to
do that.
He just wants to be part of the Big Brother program is what. Yeah.
No,
he wants it to be his DNA. He wants it to be his kid.
Oh boy, okay.
Just
what he's looking for is someone who's not out there, which is a person who would, he's looking for a surrogate, but he doesn't want to know anything. Like, he just wants
someone to hand him a son.
Yes. Yes.
And by son, does he mean like infant or like 4-year-old, like mini Drake?
I think he would take it a little like cooked to like 2.5 or 3 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. Get it through the tough stages.
Yeah.
I love it, man. I was actually just in Iowa City last week.
Yeah. Oh, because yeah.
So my D tackle Christian Boyd plays at UNI. A good chance to be a 3rd round pick this year, which would be awesome for us. He pulled his hammy 2 days before his UNI pro day.
Oh no!
What are you doing 2 days before your pro day that you're pulling a hammy?
He had 120. He had 2 10s and 120 and decelled on a 20 and got a little tweak in the upper ham. And so, like, I was on a phone call, and when I've told my clients, like, if you call me once and I don't answer, like, I'm on the phone with doing something or I'm busy, I'll call you back. If you call me twice, that means answer the fucking phone. And so he called me, I didn't answer. He calls me twice and I was like, hey, I got to take this. He's like, dude, I just pulled my hamstring. And so I had to call all 32 teams because there was a bunch of D-line coaches that were going to come and the whole bit. And what
you had to then call, you had to make 32 calls.
Oh yeah. Cause you have to tell everyone, cause you don't want to, you now get in a little bit of a damage control mode, right? Cause you don't want a D-line coach to fly to Cedar Falls, Iowa
and waste their time
and then show up and be like, what do you mean he's not doing anything? Yeah. Right? Like, what do you mean he's just going to do the bench press?
Yeah.
Right. And so you have to, like, kind of damage control, be like, hey, this is what happened. And it helps, like, it buys you some goodwill. But then we got really lucky that Cooper DeJean was banged up and wanted to do a later pro day because NFL rules, since he played at a non D1 school, he can do pro day at a D1 school in the state. And so we got lucky. We were able to pair him up with Cooper DeJean's, but
I would let him do that.
Yeah. They were great about it.
They were
phenomenal about it, and it helped that we leaned on some scouts, right? We were like, hey, you guys want this? Give a couple phone calls, help us out, right? And so they were great, but they don't allow agents in, which is really annoying. And so I ended up having to drive him to Iowa City, and so I picked him up in Des Moines. His family met me there, and I drove him in, and so I stayed in Iowa City and met with a couple guys on the Iowa team, and away we went.
I was gonna say, what did you do? Go to get Chipotle while he was doing his thing, or what?
Where did I go? I went to
Stella's.
I met the player at Stella's. I met the O lineman at Stella's.
Did you eat Stella's?
I did. I had one of the burgers, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Arguably one of the better burger joints in town.
It's really good. That's the second time. Every time I meet with an Iowa player, they're always like, let's go to Stella's. I was like, surprise, surprise.
That is a not insignificant amount of Iowa football calories right there.
Oh, I can 100% believe that.
I ate it every Tuesday, Thursday for like 26 weeks in a row. And that's not.
What was it? The Beaconsfield and
the Page.
No, the Page, and then some barbecue wings.
Oh yeah, the barbecue wings.
Ooh, I haven't had the wings. The wings fire.
They're not very big, but they're good.
All right.
And I would just get like four sides of ranch, and that would run. I don't know if in Nebraska they have like a team card that like they load meal money.
They do
on.
Now. Yeah, they didn't when I was in school. But they
call it like a red card probably or something. Yeah, the black card in Iowa City. They'd load $20, and I'd run that bill right to like $9.68 or. Maybe even like $21.68, and I'd pay an extra dollar of my own money, and I'd crush. I would just murder a chicken sandwich or a burger, fries, like 12 wings, and like half a gallon of ranch.
I took him to the tavern something?
Vine?
Yeah, the tavern on the Vine. Salads there were fire. Cobb salad there, massive.
You big salad guy?
I'm trying to keep the weight down. Right when I can on the road.
That's really the move there. Then
Chief. I hadn't eaten all day, so I was like, "It's better than what I wanted to get." I wanted to get the like fried chicken sandwich or something. I was
great,
like,
great sandwich there too.
It looked really good. I'm a big like impulse guy, and like someone as we sat down walked by with it, and I was like, "Ooh, what is that?" And I was like, "That I really want that." But
big impulse guy,
big dude. The targeted ads.
Is that how you picked your wife or what?
This guy, yeah. She walked by me. She said hi to me one day. I was sold.
Better hope those Ozempic ads aren't popping up on your feed then.
Oh, they are. They listen. My phone listens to me.
God damn.
So have the agent rules changed, or are those guys post-grad or what?
No, so the agent rules are forever and always. You can talk to an agent at any time.
Okay.
Right? Anytime. You just can't sign with an agent until after you're done for the NFL. Now, you can sign with one for NIL now at any time. Right. But as far as signing for NFL stuff and talking with an agent, you can meet with them at any time. So, you know, you guys got a couple dudes I'd like to meet with next year. That's for damn sure.
We got a lot of dudes.
I wouldn't say a lot, but you got a good couple. You got a good few.
Well, I mean, you'll take anyone, right? Not just offensive linemen or defensive linemen.
Front seven. I take front seven. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, Yaya, is that how you say it?
Y-A.
Y-A. Dude's an animal.
That yeah, he's dude. A big boy.
He's different now. He's a dude.
Yeah, we have less dudes if we're just talking a specific subset of
front seven.
Yeah, front seven.
I don't mess with DBs and receivers, man. It's just not my thing.
Well, we don't have any receivers. In fact, one just transferred out today. But
oh no, you lost another one.
Yeah, one of the ones that was supposed to be like probably one of our top three.
That's all right. You still got Luke Lachey. You're fine.
Did you see? He left maybe 24 hours after Eichel gave us a great quote about how he was look forward to this guy next season.
I edited that show
maybe 24 hours later.
I edited that show today, Grant, and I made sure to cut that part.
What? No.
No longer.
Cut that.
No. I edited it. It sounds fine.
When does that portal close? It's only open for like another week, right?
It's only open for a week?
I think, it's a two-week portal window,
right? It just
opened
yesterday, I think.
Oh, okay. So it just opened yesterday. I think it ends the end of this month.
Caden Proctor in the portal, by the way.
That's a surprise. The
portal doesn't make sense to me. Like, if post-spring ball, so you're going to show up at your new school with 3 weeks of camp and just – yeah. Maybe start playing.
I don't understand the first one either. It's you're still playing ball. Like you're opening free agency in the middle of your season.
It's like after the conference championships, right? Yeah. Like December 7th or something.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we made it to a bowl game, but if I want to transfer, even if I wanted to play in the bowl game, I can't. Because if I don't transfer now, then I'm gonna lose my seat at the table and all the good spots are gonna be filled up.
Neither window seems logical.
I mean, the only thing that I get, and I talked to a few teams about, like, why is it this window? They're like, well, we have to get them enrolled.
Yeah.
Like, we got to make sure they can get enrolled.
They're still student athletes.
So we have to make sure they can get admitted, accepted and enrolled by the time the semester starts on January 6th or whatever it is.
If they found a new team, because in the way they do this now, I love how openly they're just breaking rules.
Yeah, they're not afraid of anyone.
People go into the portal with a do not contact tag. That is saying I've already made contact.
Mm-hmm. I have a plan.
And that's not legal.
No, 100% that's not.
Unbelievable. Anyway, we're just blatantly putting that out there. Like, that's what Proctor entered the portal today. Everyone already knew this, but officially entered the portal today because it was the day it opened up. And he's got a do not contact tag on there. Well, if no one contacts him and we're doing this above board here, how is he going to find a new team? But sure enough, he'll find a new team. I mean, he's going just back to Bama
to be a Crimson.
Right. But like any other guy, like how would they find someone if you're not going to contact them?
I think the only way you could get around that is say I have an agent. My agent's shopping me to the teams that I've stamped off on,
I suppose.
But your agent's right? Only for NIL. So like.
But if you're in the portal, right. I mean, NIL is negotiating with the collectives.
Yeah. Why can't the portal just always be open? Is there a good reason why the portal isn't just always open?
I think coaches would shoot themselves given how crazy it is. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you yell at a player and he's in the portal the next day.
Yeah, like middle of the season, you wouldn't be able to coach guys. Like you piss off a guy. Like, think about all the times we got screamed at, right? And all the times you walked into your locker room like, man, that guy. Right. Like, and then a week later, after everything was fine, you were like, okay, I realized what was happening. Or even a month later when things cooled down, like in today's society of I hate this, I want out, guys would be bouncing portal hop all the time.
That would be kind of funny. You walk into the locker room, you walk past the guy's locker, you just hear him go, I'm getting in.
I'm done.
I'm in the portal, bro.
he's on his phone. Bad. Yeah. Just giving the Antonio Brown as he's running out of the locker room. Yeah.
I suppose you would have that, but I mean, and I know you can't look at it this way, but man, if you've got guys like that, you don't even want those guys on the team anyway.
I mean, it's different, dude. Today's era is just different, right? It's a what have you done for me? I used to say it's about the NFL, like from the NFL side. So what have you done for me lately league? Unfortunately, that's what it's turned into for college football. What are you, the school, done for me lately? Right. And that's what this collision course of NIL and transfer portal has put us at, and COVID year, right? I think that's another big thing not a lot of people are talking about is the fact that you can graduate from your school and then be like, let's go ring the cash register one time because I have the sixth year.
I wish I could.
Right. And next year, let me tell you this, the draft next year is going to be bananas. So this year's draft is actually historically poor. Like the top 100 are always going to be the top 100, right?
Yeah.
Very good. The bottom 150, not a very good draft because of the COVID year, NIL, and kids going back to school.
So guys are staying.
That have fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round grades that should be coming out because they're going to get drafted. But they're like, I'd rather stay in school and make $250K next year. I'd rather stay in school and make $300K guaranteed next year.
So they're doubling up the middle to bottom talent of next year.
Well, also next year is the last year of the COVID year.
Can't wait for that.
All the sixth year guys. But you also have all the kids that came in that didn't have a COVID year.
So all the fifth years.
All the fifth years.
Of 2021.
Correct. So you're going to have all the
years plus your third year.
So now this year you're going to see guys that should be free agents that get drafted in the sixth.
Oh, good for them.
Next year, you're going to see dudes that have fourth, fifth round grades that go undrafted.
Wow.
Because there's not enough spots. Right? And as an agent, it puts you – I don't know why my computer does that. I hate that shit.
You're not the only point.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, but like my – as an agent, it's going to be very interesting how we as a group and how every agency approaches this. Right? Because you have price points for when you look at a guy and say, hey, I think that guy's a mid-rounder. Here's my initial investment in him. Mm-hmm. But next year you have to go, is he a bona fide fifth rounder? Is he a bona fide fourth rounder? Is he one of these dudes that might fall through the cracks and become a free agent? And I just invested what I assume to be getting my money back from a fourth round pick kind of guy. Right. So there's an economic side that's going to come into it next year. That's going to be really fascinating how agencies handle it.
So do you see like there's a bunch of guys who get drafted in fifth, sixth round this year that had no business getting drafted. Do you see like a bunch of those guys getting cut next year?
Yeah. I do. I think we'll see the most turnover next year, the 2025 draft. Like, there's going to be a lot of turnover from the 2024 draft of guys that were on practice squad or bottom ends of rosters that'll just get cut for the new crop of kids coming in next year just off talent.
I mean,
like,
yeah,
the tight end class this year, dog shit, right? The linebacker class, horrible. The running back class, terrible. Like, the edge rusher class after the top guys, not very good. Like, it's just not a super talented draft, and you're going to see a lot of teams trying to trade picks this year to try and get out of some. Yeah,
I want next year's picks.
I was going to say that's the move then, right? Like, that's the move. Get like a couple 1 through 3 round picks,
and then try and move,
and then try and get your 4, 5, 6, and 7 traded for value.
Yeah, I mean, if like trade up if you can, right? Package up a 6, 5, 6, 7 to move up into 3.
Yeah,
right, that type of thing. Like, yeah, see what you can do this year.
Wow, that could be interesting, actually.
It'll be fascinating. It'll be super, super interesting.
Tell us about the Searles draft class you got coming out and from your rep.
Yeah, you know, so we got four dudes this year. Not quite as big as we would have liked, but we took some big swings at some big kids this year. We took second on Joe Alt, which stabbed right to the heart. You know, we were right there, right to the finish line. It was between us and CAA. He ended up going with CAA. We took second.
And they're massive.
They're massive, right? I mean, they're as big can get. We took second on Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, who's going to be the top center off the board, right? So we were right there with a lot of – we took some big swings. And we beat out a lot of agencies, but as it works in this business, second place is just first loser, right? And, you know, so we ended up with Christian Boyd out of Northern Iowa, who – non-combine invite. He's been on 15 visits, right? So he's been flying all over the country. He's actually finishing up this week. We got an O-lineman from North Dakota State. We got an O-lineman from Liberty. And then we have an O-lineman from Old Augustana there in South Dakota. So four guys. I think
Augustana's got an NFL prospect, huh?
Yeah, yeah, they did. He's big, 6'6", 310, right? Can't teach size, but he just needs some coaching. We got him in our system, so... You know, it's I think three of the four have a really solid chance of getting drafted, which would be a good year for us. But just building, already starting on next year's class and recruiting and going the whole bit. So the cycle never really stops here.
How do you find a dude in Augustana?
Watch tape, right? I mean, all I do is in the fall, dude, I'm just taped to my eyes bleed. And that's why I had to buy these glasses. I was getting like pressure headaches.
Can you? So great question, Grant. Expanding off of that, how do you... What's the process roughly? Because you're not going to detail every single interaction or piece of it. But what is the process for you watching tape? You're sitting there. It's October, the second weekend in October. You find a guy on tape. You're like, dang, that's the second or third time he's popped up over these first 5 or 6 games. I think that's a guy that we would like to go after. We'd like to represent him, maybe see if we can't partner with him. From that moment, what does the process look like to, let's say he does eventually sign with you guys?
Yeah.
What are the steps in there?
Well, so usually
do you DM him on Instagram?
Yeah, that's honestly the number one way.
Wow.
But really, if you're looking at a guy in October, it's probably too late, right? I'm watching tape. I'm watching tape in October for the juniors.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Majority of the recruiting is January, February, March, and April, like leading up. So like, for example, I'll pick the kid that I'm talking to now from LSU, right? There's a kid from LSU that I targeted 2 years ago that was a freshman, right? Playing as a freshman. I was like, this dude's going to be a dude, right? Because I was watching Austin Duclos, who's now with the Texans. And I was like, hey, this dude popped, put him in one of my little databases and just kind of put a star next to him, like monitor, right? So monitor him through his sophomore year. Blows up all SEC. I'm like, all right, let's go to this kid. DM him, right? You DM him and it order borderline kind of stalker. Like, you just keep DMing him, right? You like one of his things initially. You send a reaction to maybe one of his posts. Then you send it's just the name of the game.
This is quite literally you're courting.
You're flirting on Instagram. Right. You're flirting and then you just hope you get a flirt back. And then as soon as you get a flirt back, it's game on. Right. Hey, appreciate you getting back to me. Right. And then it's like, hey, let's get a Zoom call set up. And sometimes they're like, yeah, sounds great. Sometimes they're like, hey, call my dad. Right. And so then you pivot, you go to see mom and dad, and then you get the Zoom call set up initially with all the partners, right? Me, myself, Zach, get the partners about an hour, go through what we do, how we're different. Then you have to, okay, the next touch point, I want to get him in front of our O-line trainer, right? Alex Boone, right? 10-year vet, trains all my O-linemen, get him in front of him, another Zoom call, right? That goes well. Then it's like, okay, hey, how about an in-person meeting, right? This summer, right? June, July, how about we come down and we meet in person? Because I think there's something to be in today's era of, hey, look me in the eye, shake my hand, see that I'm another 6'6 human being just like you.
Yeah, for sure.
Great helps, right? Yeah, and so you go get some dinner, hang out, meet them on their turf, and then you lead that into the season. And this is where, I mean, a little bit of the secret sauce is out, but we then are able to do so much more than the other agency because of our ability to watch tape with the player. Hey, I'm now watching this tape through a scout's eyes. And not being afraid to call a player out and be like, hey, dude, you're not getting your backside handed on that reach, right? Hey, you're opening too much in your set, which is why you're getting beat across your face and giving up that sack, right? Constructive criticism that's not in a bad way, but just saying like the scouts see this, right? Mm-hmm. Like your coach might not say anything about it because you're the guy and he's got 17 dudes in the room, but I'm trying to help you grow that 85% of what's going to get you drafted. We're going to crush the 15% in the pre-draft process. There's no doubt about that. But 85% of what's getting you drafted is what you do between the white lines. And so you build that relationship with them. And then eventually December 1 is when the pressure really starts ratcheting it up, because December 1 after the regular season closes is when everyone starts making decisions.
Yeah.
Right. So now it's, hey, do I need to come see you? Do I need to meet with you in person again? Do I need to meet with you on the phone? Do you want to Zoom? What do you want to do? And you try and start closing dudes. And that's where you take gut punches in this business, because you'll be talking to a guy, like I just said, since January. Right. 12 months. Joe Alt. I talked to Joe Alt for 12 months. And then it took all but one phone call for that all to be gone, kaput. Right. Hey, man, appreciate everything you've done. The most dreaded words in our business. I'm going a different direction. Right. And that's it. You don't get an answer to why. You don't get an answer to how come. What didn't I do? What could I have done better? Like, it's just, hey, I'm going with someone else. And, okay. Thanks,
man. No different than when you're calling a coach that was recruiting you. And yeah. You're, hey, I'm going to a different school, man.
100%. It's exactly what it is. Right. And so you get a lot of gut punches, but then when you get the guys that say yes, it's fantastic. And then off and rolling into the pre-draft process. But it's about a year. It's about a year cycle that you spend time, energy, effort, money to go visit them, right? That you may get nothing back from that.
What's how big of a net do you guys try to cast, like when you're like looking for a class to sign? Like, obviously you can't go after, you know, 200 guys, mm-hmm. but you know.
Yeah, in an ideal world, I think we'd like to sign anywhere between 8 to 12 as a group, right? Mm-hmm. So anywhere in there.
You have 3 guys at your agency?
We have four guys right now. Ideally, we'd like to get up to where we have 30 dudes under contract.
No. Agents. Three registered agents. Okay.
Right. And so ideally, we'd like to get where we have 30 guys on contract in the NFL, right? So about 10 apiece.
Yeah.
Right now, we're 8, right? So after this class, hopefully we'll be closer up to 12 to 13, right? And so just start building that over time, because that's going to be a constant revolving number, right? You have guys that play 10 years, guys that play 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. So just trying to stock that up as best you can. But yeah, we try and cast a net out of signing 8 to 12 a year. And sometimes it's going to be, last year it was 7, this year it was 4. And then hopefully next year is closer to 10 or 11.
How many do you target that? Because you're obviously not going to go 100%. Target 20, try to get half of them? Or?
Yeah. So talking with Chris Giddings, who's my business partner, who's been an agent for 27 years, he says you need to have about a 3-to-1 ratio.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So if I want to sign 10 O-linemen, I need to be talking to about 30 of them going into the season.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because guys start falling off for A, they don't like talking to you, or they don't play well. Right. Cause it's very easy. We do the same thing sometimes, right? Sometimes we're on a guy and then he's not playing well, and you kind of slowly have to start fading to black. And then all of a sudden they circle back around at the end of the year and they're like, hey man, what's up? And it's like, no one's calling you anymore, are they?
And you're the one at that point that's like, we're going a different direction.
Well, what we usually say is, hey, we'll represent you, but we can't invest any money. Right? Like,
there's no risk to you.
We'll invest in you. We'll help you. We'll do all, like, time-wise, but monetarily, we can't give you anything in XYZ reason why, from here's what the scouts say, here's what the grade is. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. You know you didn't play great. Like we've had a few of those, that those conversations suck, but that's just the nature of what this world is. Of this isn't a charity. This is real money. This is high stakes at the table.
How often do you have players come to you like looking for representation? Like
I get emails every day.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, every single day. Because
that's all, good. Because that means stuff, your agency's out there.
But I mean, a lot of it is the kid from Northwest Missouri State. That because every NFL agent is on the NFLPA site.
Oh, so they're
and so all and so like guys will just go through and mass email blast with a link to their huddle or a link to their Exos page or whatever.
Well, you were literally like a college coach recruiting. Like there's some guys that you were going after, and there's for every one of those guys, there's 100 that are trying to get you to look at them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's about 900 registered agents, 750 to 900 at any given time, and there's really only 1,500 active NFL players, mm-hmm. right? So, like, there's a lot of agents, not a lot of spots. And then you're talking like Drew Rosenhaus, CAA Athletes First, probably represent 500 of those guys, right? So, like, those
Rosenhaus is crazy, dude.
Dude, he's got like 100 clients,
and they all have like
12 cell phones.
Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. I don't know how he does it. I really don't.
I'm pretty sure he represented Desmond. He was at the facility on pro.
He loses a lot of clients. I mean, guys. I mean, because if you're not one of his big time guys, you don't get much attention.
Yeah.
But like that's. I mean, but a lot of what he does is he's a notorious poacher. Yeah. Right. He's a notorious poacher. He'll do things like reach out to guys before free agency and be like, "Hey, you should be getting XYZ money," which is a heavily inflated dollar amount compared to what they probably should get. And it's like, "Hey, if your agent can't get you that, call me." And then his agent's like, "Dude, you're not worth 12 million. You're worth 7. Right. And he's like, "Well, I think I'm worth 12. And then he can't find him a $12 million deal. And then he fires him and he goes to Rosenhaus. And then Rosenhaus is like, "I could have got you that. I can't now because all the spots are taken, but I can get you a seven or seven and a half. And then you lock him in. And it's like, "Oh, well, shit, I could have got him that." Right. That's a big game that agents play quite often.
Wow, that's crazy.
You can fire an agent anytime. Send me an email. Send him an email 5 days later. Sign a new one.
Can I hire you as my agent? I think I have a chance to play.
You got a chance? You want to get back into the long snapping game?
Yeah.
How's the long snapper class this year?
Not great.
Not
great. Yeah. We are a long snapper from 2021 or 2022. Still banging. He went to Zahner. Did Zahner camp again, and it looks like he may get a mini camp invite this year. So, dude, long haul for those dudes. Those dudes are – you got to have a lot of fight in you. I would not have had the fight that my long snapper has. I'd have thrown in the towel a long time ago.
I didn't even get a chance to fight.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So I want to ask you this. If a guy doesn't have an agent, what are his chances? Like, even if he is like, "Clue, you didn't have an agent, did you?"
Yeah, and I honestly, it was one of those things where looking back, like – I should have found one. I didn't know where to go. I had no information on the process, or like, I didn't even know where to start. Quite honestly, Kev, like there was at one point, I think I remember one weekend I was just bored during that spring and I was going to like hit you up because you had that friend from Chicago or whatever. That's that like,
he represented my brother. He was my brother's agent.
Yeah. He represented your brother. And I was just going to be like, "Yo, could he be my agent too?" Just like, but I never said anything, and
I'm sure he would have. Yeah.
Right. And I know Casey was, Casey had an agent, but I had talked to Casey about it, and he's like, "You know, quite honestly, if you do well at the pro day, teams will get your contact information," which they did. Several did call and got the contact information. So it's not like they didn't have it, right? They would have been calling me instead of an agent. I just don't think anyone was interested. I wasn't big enough. They just didn't care.
I don't know. Will they take you less seriously if you don't have an agent?
Probably. I mean,
it's harder. It's harder for them to gather information.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's harder for them to truly understand, and it's a sign of like, "Hey, someone else wanted him."
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, if someone else wanted to sign him, that must mean he's kind of a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably screwed up with that. Maybe if I had, here's the one thing I think, if I had an agent, there would have at least been someone in that free agent process of, okay, draft's over, no one's really calling me. Like, at least at that point, if I have an agent, he might be able to make a few calls to get me into a mini camp.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've done that, right? We've mass spammed at the end of the draft of like, "Hey, we got a fullback," or be a long snapper. You got any chance for a mini camp? We've got, yeah, we'll take one. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's right. where I think we have the
contacts, right?
Yeah.
Like I can, our agency can get like that 32 calls we split up. We had it done in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you just have the contacts of the right people to call within each organization, which when you're a player that don't have an agent, you got none of that.
Yeah. I didn't have anything. It was, if nobody calls me and gives me a shot, there's 100% chance that I'm not making it into a mini camp, or that I'm not making it in the NFL at all. There's still a 98% chance as a specialist that if you get a mini camp invite, you're still not going to make it, but there's at least a chance versus the Packers and the Niners call me the Thursday or the Wednesday before the draft. And they're like, hey, just want to make sure we got your information for draft day. We liked what we saw on pro day, yada, yada. Those two teams are radio silent after the draft ends. And it's like, all right, well, guess I'm going to hang up the cleats and coach CrossFit then, because I don't know where to go from here. And so I think that's my one regret, Kev, is I probably should have had an agent to just like at that point in time, then fight for me to get in somewhere. Cause I believe in my heart that if I would have gotten in front of people, I would have been able to prove that my size was not an issue. And my snapping was not at 243.
Wasn't the best 243.
It was a sloppy 243. However, it was still a more athletic 243 than 70% of the guys in the league.
I'll tell you, the snappers were different. Like we have the Packers like, hey, we want our snapper to be 255.
Yeah. Right? And that's the issue.
But then the Raiders are like, well, we want him at 235. We want an athletic guy that can run. And so like you get,
where were the Raiders at?
You get stuck in this rock and a hard place. Like, the Packers and the Raiders, if they both want you to come to the rookie mini camp, it's like, dude, I can't swing 15 pounds in a week.
Yeah.
Right. Like it doesn't work like that.
Well, and that's, And that would have been the issue. Cause realistically, like I would have had to have played at like 235, 240. But there's guys out there. There's guys that have a starting spot. One of the 32 right now that weigh 225, 230, 235. Like there are guys in that range. They're generally 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, they're long.
And they can stick their arms out and prevent other 240, 250-pound dudes from running through on PAT field goal. I would have had some limitations there a little bit, but I would have gotten it done, I know for a fact. Would there have been a spot? What team would have got me? There's still a high chance that I run into like a Morgan Cox situation. They're like, yeah, we have Morgan Cox, so you're not coming in to snap for us, even if you don't do anything wrong. It's cool. I run a podcast.
Hey man, pod life's fun. I enjoy it.
It's way less stressful.
It is. I really love our podcast that we launched. Like, it's just fun to get on, talk about dumb shit, and it's like, wow, people actually like to listen to what you say sometimes.
Yeah, it's cool. That's how we feel every time we get on the microphone.
Every single time.
Going back to the investment in a guy.
Yeah.
You start that process. You start courting them. You're like, hey, like what you're doing. Great game this weekend, yada, yada. Finally, you get to the point where it's like, all right, I think I want to sign with you guys. Like, let's make this happen. Cool. Mm-hmm. Great. What are the tier? You don't have to divulge your specific agency's money at that point, but like maybe you even know, like, what's Rosenhaus spending on a top guy?
Yeah, you know, so I can say with pretty good certainty, I know that like Athletes First and CAA and like the big Rosenhaus, the big sports agencies, they'll give guys that they think are top, like first round picks, they'll give those guys $250,000, $300,000 just to sign with them, right? Just as like a signing bonus.
Holy shit.
Which is an advance, right? They'll say, hey, this is an advance, but they're going to give it to them on January 1st.
Wow.
Right. And so that's always the fight you're fighting when you're going after the top dogs.
Because they have all the money.
Unlimited resources, right? I mean, you're talking about like CAA's got the baseball division and the athlete, like the actor CAA, division.
I was going to say CAA does like movie everything. Stars.
Yeah, they do everything, right? So they have unlimited funds. And so like you're battling with those type of guys when you're talking about the upper rounder first, second guys. Like, those dudes are always going to like be threatened with bags of cash slid across the table.
That's incredible.
I find it interesting, though. I mean, I know it's just like human nature. It's like, I want my money now. But it's like, what are you going to do with $250,000 in like the 2.5 months before you sign?
Something dumb. Right.
I mean, I'm just thinking like
that might even be
like
a liability.
I'm just thinking back to our spring, Kluve, like, 90% of our senior class was training in Iowa City instead of somewhere else. Right?
You want to know what I would have
said? Everyone's living in their college house with their roommates, paying the same, like getting free food still. It's like, why do you need even $10,000? Like, you know, I'll just wait 3 months and then I'll take my signing bonus as it comes.
Kev, I have one rebuttal there.
Yeah, I know. It's naive. It's short-sighted. People want their money now.
Yes, but do you know how many V-Bucks and gems we could have bought on Clash of Clans with 250K?
Yeah, we're in the maxed out Town Hall 15.
So they're giving them hundreds of thousands in signing bonuses.
Signing bonuses / – and they hide it behind the term marketing advance.
And then they – also are doing, hey, here's a massage every week. Here's a
and then you pay for their training wherever they go. Right. So that's the different class, the different world of like the elites.
That's the top level.
Right. That's the elite top level. Now you say like mid rounders. There's definitely different tiers, right? The going tier to sign a draft pick is room and board and stipend, or room and board and full pay for their training. Right. So you're going to send them to a training facility for 8 weeks. You're going to pay for their living and you're going to pay for their food and you're going to pay for a car or pay to get their car there, wherever the facility may be. Then on top of that, you probably have to also give them a monthly living stipend. Right. So you have to say, I'm sending you to Minneapolis or I'm sending you to Florida to train, but I also need you to keep your house in whatever city you're in. So you've got to pay rent. Right. You have bills to pay. Maybe you have a car insurance. Like, you got to be able to pay life. So you have to have the conversation of what that looks like. So I'm not just giving you money to give you money. Like, right. It has to be keeping you. And then that stipend is usually for 4 months leading all the way up to the draft. Right. So that's kind of like platinum tier. Right. And that's just the going rate for any agency that wants to sign a draftable player. You start getting more in the PFA range than the
even for us. Like, you're probably going to go.
That's how competitive it is. That's how competitive it is right now. And the issue with some of this stuff is young guys or new agencies will get into this business and they just want to sign clients. And so they'll offer that package to a preferred free agent. Right. And so then that just bumps everyone else's price up. Right. Because you're looking at, if you're a junior and you look at your buddy that's a senior ahead of you and you know he's a PFA and he's talking to you about all the stuff he got, well, he's like, well, I'm supposed to be a mid-rounder, so I should get at least double that.
Right.
Right? And like, so it just constantly elevates and escalates the price of which it takes to sign a player.
That's crazy.
But with, you know, everyone who's got a draft grade on them is probably making decent NIL money these day and age.
Yeah.
Does that not kind of temper their need or want?
The jury's still out on that. The jury's still out on that. You know, it's hard to tell as of right now of does that help or does that hurt? Because I think for some guys it inflates what they feel their self-worth is, right? It's like, I made $2 million in college. So like, what are you paying me? Right, like, this is what I'm worth, right?
Yeah,
this
is NIL is screwing you guys too.
Price of what I feel like is worth. If you want to work with me, what are you paying me?
But do they understand that this is an upfront advance on their salary? Like, you are paying all that money back, right?
Well, maybe, right? Maybe it is. Maybe it's. I mean, some guys, in order to sign, we have to say, no, this is my investment in you. Mm. Right? You make it, I'll get my money back through your 3%. You don't. You tried hard, right? That is part of what can make or break signing a guy too, is, hey, is this an advance on, is this a loan or is this your investment? Right? Oh, like there's two different ways there. Right. And I mean, and everyone has the caveat, like, if you fire me within the first year, then I'm obviously coming after you for my money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't just use my money and then fire me and go to someone else.
Right.
But, you know, so like, that's kind of the going rate to sign guys. And then for the PFAs and the lower guys, sometimes it'll be like, hey, I'll cover your training, but that's it, right? Like, hey, I'll cover training or I'll cover your housing, right? You have to get yourself there. You have to put your, you have to train, whatever the dollar cost is, you got to pay for that to be the training, but I'll pay to put you in a hotel, or I'll throw you in an Airbnb with the other boys or whatever it might be. You guys can share a car, right? Or then there's kind of the lower tier level, which is like, hey, I like you. I think you're a long shot. I think I can help you. I can't invest anything in you, right? Like, just financially, it doesn't make sense. Or you can say, hey, I'll split it with you, right? There's a tons of different ways that you can skin this cat and look at it, you know, but it really just gets up once you get into the draft pick dudes. It's so competitive.
So like, if you've got a draft pick guy and he's not he's not Cooper DeJean, that's crazy that I know that Cooper's probably got like $100,000. Just
who do you sign with?
I have no idea.
Do you know?
You got a draft pick guy and you're like, okay, this guy's going to go in the third or fourth. And so it's a good investment on your part.
Yep.
To pay for that training, pay for his travel out there, pay for his meals. What is that full package average run for 4 months or whatever? The 8 weeks of training and then the stipend up through April. Like what is the average?
Yeah, I think,
was it 50K?
Between 20 and 50.
Okay.
Depending on where you send them. Right. And the other piece, you guys, that's the other like piece of this, is if you're first, second, third, it's usually 1%, 2%, 3%, right? So not only are you paying these dudes a shit ton of money on the front end, you're only charging them 1% of their contract, of their rookie deal if they're a first rounder, right? Or if they're a top 10, I know some agencies will be like, hey, I'm only charging you 0.25.
Jeez.
Right? Because you're betting for the second contract. And that's
you're not going to drop you.
That's right. You're betting that you're betting that if you're a first rounder, you're getting a mega second contract. And guess what? That right there, my friends, is 3%. And that, because we're going to work for that money, right? And I think that that's actually fair. Like, if you're a first rounder, you were really good in college.
Yeah.
Right. An agent might be able to help you go from 21 to 18 or 18 to 13. Right. But like, how much we actually can do for a top 20 pick. I don't think it's fair to charge a guy 3% on a signing bonus of $20 million when he was just really good in college.
That's true. Yeah, because you're doing less. There's just less ceiling.
There's less.
Has that become like industry standard then? It's like first round draft pick, you want 1%.
1% or less, depending on where they're drafted. I know guys that. Oh yeah, 1% of 20 million. Sign me up.
Not bad.
But like, yeah, I know that it's now even gotten so competitive at the top that it's like, hey, top five is 0.25, top 10 is 0.5, like 10 to 20 is 0.75, and then 20 to 32 is 1%.
And that is used as a competitive tactic from the agencies.
Yep. It's capitalism, man. Supply, demand, market forces.
And if you're CAA, you know you can weather that storm.
Yeah.
Right. You can weather that storm of, hey, I'm going to take a bath on this kid's first contract, or maybe I'll break even. Right. Like, based off on 4 years of his first round contract, after year four, I'll probably break even on the amount of money I've spent on him. But then if he turns out to be a stud and he's the first left tackle taken at 7 overall, and then in 4 years, he signs a 4-year, $100 million deal,
Tristan,
now you're like, I just made $3 million. Right. So like, that's the betting game.
Tristan signs for 125 or whatever he signs for. And
yeah, I promise you his agent made 3% of that because you work your ass off for that. Right. Free agency. That's where you make your money as an agent. But that's also where you prove your worth as an agent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you prove your worth of being able to negotiate and make sure the language is right. Make sure you're getting as much guaranteed money as possible and make sure the protections are in there and the workout bonuses and the escalators and the, you know, you talk about like Pro Bowl bonuses, those type of things all factor into what you negotiate in and out.
I feel like more and more guys are signing their second contract with the team that they get drafted by. Is that maybe accurate? Or
in the top in the top three rounds? Yes. Yeah. Right. Like, if you, and that's part of why when people whine about like people being old, right? It's like Michael Penix or Bo Nix, right? They're like, he's 25. Like, if I draft him in the first, I'm only getting 4 years out of him. I'm not going to be able to get the 8-year, 9-year, 10-year starting quarterback that I want versus a guy like Caleb Williams, who's 21 years old. And you're like, I hope he's a Chicago Bear for the next 12 years.
Yeah.
And then he's still only 32. Right. That's where the age factor comes in when you talk about some of the top rounders, because guys don't want to just draft a first rounder for 4 years. They want him there for their career.
Wow. That's really, that's another thing.
I mean, at the same time, say you get drafted at 25, you know, 26, you're really getting up there. It's actually insane that you're playing college football the year before.
There's a kid in Kentucky on his seventh year right now. Eli Cox.
The kid in Miami has a ninth year. He's had 14 injury years and like a
dude's gonna be a doctor.
Honestly, if he's not, like, what the fuck happened to him? But no, like, say like a non-quarterback comes out at like 25. That probably is like a little bit more like you know, like maybe at 6 to 7 good years on him.
Yep.
Like a quarterback, like you can, if you get 10 good years out of quarterback, I think you as a franchise call that a win, right?
100%.
Yeah, you can play good quarterback football until you're 35, no problem.
Yeah. In the mid rounds, it's not as big of a deal, right? Like rounds 4, 5, 6, 7, the age doesn't play, because at those guys, you're betting you're just getting their 4 years or maybe even 2 or 3. And then they're either going to fizzle out and fade out, or you're going to release them and replace them with someone younger. And you're not going to eat a massive financial investment like you are in the first three rounds.
Right. Or sign like a mid-size contract for like two, three more years.
Be like, okay, you developed into a good role player. Maybe you're a spot starter. Hey, you're going to be a 2 year for $8 million buck guy. Sweet. Sign me up.
Most of those guys are happy to take that.
100%.
Yeah.
Huh. There's so much shit involved in this.
Oh, it's why I love it. Like it's super fun, right? It's super fun. I can't wait to get my first class to free agency, right? That's where we're at. And that'll be in 2 years, right? Cordell Volson, my starting guard for the Bengals, started as a rookie, started as a second year, going into his third year, right? Like if he can start for 4 years, now we're looking at, I mean, some of these guards this year made 20, 21 a year. Right. Like, and now you're looking, okay, so if you're that kind of caliber, you're looking for anywhere between 15 to 20 a year. The salary cap's going to go up another 10 to 20 million over the next couple of years. Now it starts getting fun.
Mm. Wow. Kev, we might have mentioned this last time, but throughout that process, the reverse engineering of that is you and I really need to just open up a training facility for these draft prospects.
They rake us over the coals,
because these agents are just going to pay us.
We don't have a choice.
$10,000 a kid every spring, and all we need.
Oh, that'd be a bargain, my friend.
Okay, $20,000 a kid.
What you gotta do is you gotta do like the old government job. Is like, you know, you're bidding out the job, but you're not paying for it. So it'd be like, you get in with the recruit who's like, I want you to choose that guy. I want you to send me training there with that guy. And that guy charges $20,000. And that
basically we attach ourselves.
We get friends with the incoming
kids. That's what they do. You're dead on, Kevin. Yeah. These gyms have now started infiltrating. They used to be, they went through the agent. Now they go to the kid and they build a relationship. Hey, come down to the summer, right? They're come down, train here for the summer for free. Not a problem, right? Just come see the facility. And they're, oh, this is great. And yeah, man, this is awesome down here, isn't it? And
I have a couple of the hot moms with big kids walk by.
They're all like, this is great. And then all of a sudden, like, all right, hey, December rolls around. It's like, hey, where do you want to go train? You're like, oh, I really like this place down in Florida. It's awesome. Yeah. Like, oh, what's the name of it? Oh, it's XYZ. Oh, okay, let me call them. You call them like, hey, I think I'm going to be working with this. What you got? Oh, you know, for that 8 weeks, it'll be $25,000. Oh, okay. And then if he's a late round pick, you're like, well, I don't want to spend $25,000. Like, that's not a smart investment.
Right.
Well,
maybe make that back at the end of year one.
Someone will.
Yeah.
Right. And so then you have to decide, is it worth losing this kid over that or not?
Damn.
Right. Is it worth losing this kid, or is it worth, hey, I have facilities I trust that do a really nice job that are closer to 15.
Kev, it sounds like we could just start stealing from people.
Yes.
Oh, these facilities are crooks, dude.
Also, we know an agent who can send his people to us.
Bring it on. Hey, you give it to me for cheaper. Let's do it. Just teach them how to do the underwear Olympics.
So stupid, by the way.
I'm about done with O-linemen running 40s.
It's the stupidest thing on
earth. I'm watching these dudes pop hammies at the combine, and I'm just like, what are we doing? It's so dumb.
As an agent,
though, I think it's the most entertaining of the position groups.
I like the D-line.
Oh, yeah, the wide receivers. They're fast. That's
Cool. Yeah, cool, sweet.
Who doesn't want to watch Chris Jones run down and his cock fall out of his shirt?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the D linemen are interesting because those are more the freakazoids.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. You're like, yeah. Oh yeah, that dude's 275 pounds, just ran a 4.6. That's really impressive. Yeah. Right. And then you're like, oh, look at this 6'6", 320 pound guy run a 5.2, just everything he's got, right?
Just moves just going everywhere.
Yeah, just flopping in the wind.
Yeah.
This year's class of alignment was freaky though. Yeah. Super athletic class. You got dudes running like 4.9s and 3.10, and it's nuts.
I could be wrong with this, but I feel like offensive line, just like every other position, is like we want to get faster. We want to get leaner. We want to get faster. I mean, that's just where the NFL is these days.
Yeah. Everyone's moving in this outside zone scheme, right? Like very few teams are Iowa-esque of a fullback, 21 personnel, 22 personnel, line up between the tackles, invite three linebackers onto the field. And
hey, you don't know shit about Iowa, actually. We're spread offense now. We have Tim Lester.
Yeah, that's true too, right? I'm Drake's favorite guy.
Lot of pre-snap motion going on at the spring ball in Iowa City.
Yeah.
Just letting you know.
Yeah, ask Luke Fickell how that worked out for him up in Wisconsin last year.
Rail ain't going to have shit on the Hawkeyes. Just letting you know that.
We'll see. We'll see, my friends. We'll see. But, fuck, where was I going with that? Oh, just like O-lineman. Yeah, dude, everyone he talked to is like, yeah, we want O-lineman that can run. We want them to be able to stretch and push and get to the second level and get out in space, because so many teams are now with the play boot action and all the pin pull stuff. Like, yeah, they want, everyone's looking for athletic big dudes that can run.
And I feel like that's happened to pretty much every position. Like linebackers are no longer 240, 250,
yeah.
They're all 230. They're
225, 30, right? Like you've got 225 Mike linebackers running.
Like I
got
to be able to run with that running back. I got to be able to run with these tight ends and stuff.
It's the evolution of the game that we've seen from when they used to run wing T. Like it just continues to get more and more athletic.
Yeah, but like the NFL always self-corrects, right? It always self-corrects. So eventually,
that one team that has massive offensive line,
right.
There's like, going to run for 5 yards.
Yeah, there's going to be a team that eventually is like, all right, guess what? The fullback's back, baby. You want to be that 225 pound linebacker? We're running lead at you with Pat Ricard from the Ravens.
Fill this gap real quick.
Yeah, we're going to double team the shit out of your speedy three technique that can rush the passer. That's 265, and we're going to double him. We're going to lead up on your small linebacker, and then everyone will switch back if you have success with it. Like, everyone will start switching back, right? And that's
if you're the outlier, 29 other teams are built to defeat the spread offense, and like they're small, lean, and can run. It's like, but you're that one big team. Like,
yeah,
they might have trouble stopping you.
Yeah, the NFL always self corrects once it feels like it's spread. Like paying quarterbacks, right after the Deshaun Watson and all that, they were like, whoa, let's rein this back here a little bit, boys. Like you saw that, you saw the self correct after the Todd Gurley. Right. That was the death of the big running back payment.
Yep.
Right. He screwed everyone. Right. Like, so they always find ways to self-correct. They're smart. They're billionaires with a capital B.
Capital B.
Just takes time, just like anything else in the market.
How does it, one more question. I want to go back to the investment into the guys. And again, you don't have to, you can say how people generally do it.
Yeah.
But how, an agency like you guys, you know, you're not sitting on $7 million worth of cash of like, hey, we could just spend this little nest egg we got on all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Is that coming from like your own money? Is it agency money that's like, hey, we got $100,000 to pool for this year that we can kind of like go off of? Or like,
yeah. Every agency is different, right? When you're the big agencies, like you said, you have the bank internally.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of startup agencies will have like capital guys that want
investment.
Yeah, investors.
Wow.
Right, like investors into the agency that are like, hey, here's what I'm willing to put in. Go sign the guys. I get 50% or I get 70% back of whatever you make on the course of this guy. I like that the NFLPA does do a nice job of on the SRAs. You have to disclose who the payments go to, right? Like if there's anyone else getting paid that from that player's cash, wherever that money goes, you have to disclose where it goes to. So you have to show your player, hey, I'm paying, there's someone else that's the boss, right? Like, because I may be the agent, but this dude's the money. And at the end of the day, he makes the decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, I was fortunately enough to be blessed to play a long time in the league and not have to have an investor.
Sure.
You know, be able to come out of my own pocket. Now, I don't love doing that.
We get it, Searles. You're rich, bro.
Not anymore, pal. Right. 4 years into this business. But, you know, it's a nice thing is why I wanted to own my own company. It's why I wanted to own my own business.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many dudes have just capital investors that go into it. But at the end of the day, then they can start telling you, hey, I want you to go recruit this guy. And you're like, but I don't think he's very good. It's like, yeah, but I'm signing the check.
Right.
Right. Like, so go recruit this guy. I'm like, okay. Right. And so, like, there's just a lot of politics that can get to be involved in that.
Yeah. Well,
have you considered at all dipping your toe into the NIL agency?
I was going to ask about that too.
Yep. So we started doing that this year. We stayed out of it initially just because.
Sounds like a clusterfuck.
It's a complete cluster. It's a complete cluster, dude. But what we found is these collectives were really taking advantage of these players. You know, and things as simple as
such an agent answer.
But like, it's true.
Here comes the agent propaganda.
But it's not even as much about the money as much as it is the fine print, right? If you're a 21-year-old and you see six figures on a dollar sheet, you don't read the fine print. You're just like, I'm going to make 200 grand. Where do I sign? But then as I started helping some of these guys, like, hey, don't sign anything until you let me review this contract, right? And then you start reading things like the termination clause reads, either party can terminate this clause at any time without cause. You're like, well, hold on. That's not a contract, right? Like, that's you saying that you can get this kid on campus.
That's and a then
the portal window closes, and then you go, ah, see, we didn't raise enough money, so now that 200 looks more like 50, and now he's stuck, right? Because maybe it's his last year,
yeah. And the portal,
right? Or they back end load it, right? They back end load it in a huge way, and so obviously you try as an agent, like, hey, fight for as much money up front, as much guarantees as possible, and you go through like, hey, what are the deliverables, all those things. But when there's no governing body and there's no CBA, there's no regulation of what is a deliverable, right? Because it's not pay to play, right? Air quotes, it's not pay to play. There's supposed to be a deliverable, right? Like, hey, you're going to make this much money off of X amount of social media posts, this many advertisements, you'll show up to da 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 da. But then as you start talking to teams, like some teams like, oh, a deliverable is just being eligible. Okay. Another team is like, yeah, deliverable is just posting once a month on Instagram. Like, there's no rule that defines what a deliverable is, which is why people can get themselves in situations like Iowa did, where Caden Proctor says, I want 100 grand. And you say, okay, well, the deliverable is you just show up on campus and you go to a basketball game and we get to take a picture of you. Ding, deliverable, money's in the pocket. There's no more back and forth of how do I get that money, because it can't necessarily be tied to pay to play.
We're actually good on that. We made sure we didn't lose 100 grand.
You didn't?
No.
How much did you lose?
I think it was, I mean, it wasn't a large amount. It might have been 5 or 10 grand from what I
highly doubt that.
So the way that our collective is set up is really smart. It's in two ways. It's got two parts. One is by charitable, and it's the main, all of the public money that comes in. So, like, say you went to the Swarm Collective right now,
yep.
And Searles, because you love the Hawks and you love this, you love coming on our podcast,
black and gold.
Right? You want to donate 25, 50, 100 bucks to the Swarm Collective. That goes into one pot. And the way that the players earn that is by, it's all set up. You have to go and show up at an event. You have to go and
something charity wise. Yeah,
something charity wise. Caden didn't do any of that.
It's technically a nonprofit organization.
Yeah. So the 100 grand number that you're referring to, which was about what we raised, I won't say the Swarm Collective raised in that day where, like, we heard, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, Caden's coming to Iowa, or he might be coming to Iowa. Everybody throw your money at this. All that money went into the charitable side, and he never saw any of it because he wasn't on campus long enough to do a charitable. And we confirmed that with head of the Swarm. We had him on a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
Now, the other side of that was the, if you're a private business and you're like, hey, I like this specific kid, I own a truck dealership, you want a truck or you want whatever, that money is its own individual, like,
for sure,
singular deals. I think he did one of those deals for a smaller amount.
You think that's part of why he left?
From what I could tell, he literally went on spring break with his boys from Bama, and they were basically
the crew.
And yeah, they were basically
fell in love with the crew.
Yeah, he's like, dude, I miss the boys, man. And
fell in love with a lot of things on spring break.
You want to elaborate on that, Kevin?
It's just not good, man. Spring break.
Spring break's not a good time.
Do you have any stories, Kev?
No, none.
Okay.
But I agree. I think it's smart to set the collective up that way. I do. Right. And Nebraska does it similar to where we don't pay out individual players. Like, it's all based off of like events you go to. Now there's certain guys that will be assigned more events than others.
Yep.
Same. Yep.
Right. But that's just capitalism. At the end of the day, it is capitalism, right? It's the end of the day. I mean, the big thing that makes me wonder about all this, and we talked about this a little bit while texting, is like the pay to play aspect. And when does that contract between the school and the athlete start coming into play? Because right. I think that's the path in which we're headed.
It's got to be, right?
The issue then becomes, though, once there's a contract between school and player, there's now an employee-employer relationship. And the one thing that then comes with that is workers' comp. And when you start talking about workers' comp, you're talking about millions of dollars.
A lot of money.
Millions of dollars, right? Every single one of us, I'm sorry, I don't think you played at Iowa, but every single one of us that played any type of college football, we got hurt, right? We got hurt at one point in time. Kluve, I don't know, maybe you didn't, but you probably had an injury at one point in time.
I went to the trainer one time. My shoulder, like my bicep, hurt bad for like one day.
Let's use Drake. This is a perfect example.
Okay.
Let's use Drake. Drake snaps his leg.
Yeah.
Right? If you're being under contract from Iowa, you will be awarded workers' comp for that snapped leg.
Sure.
For a long time. Right? You could claim disability. And
he is actually still disabled from this.
Right. Yeah. But now you're saying that Iowa would be paying Drake as his employer for however long he's now disabled, even after he's gone, because he was an employee of you.
How does the NFL do that?
We just through the state. We file workers' comp for everything.
Yeah.
Like when I busted up my ankle in Buffalo, I filed workers' comp through the state of New York and I got a payout from it.
Really?
And now the state of New York or the Bills, whoever has to pay it, is medically covered on my ankle for life.
Wow.
Right? Same in Minnesota for my knee. Right? And every state has different workers' comp laws. The blue states historically are the best ones to get hurt in. Right? If you're going to get hurt, go get hurt in California. Go work for someone in California and get hurt. You'll get paid a lot. If you don't, go to Michigan. Get hurt in Michigan, you're toast. Right? Red state. It's like a 2-week statute of limitation. Like, you have to report it. Like, and so there's rules to it, but no one in the NCAA wants to do a workers' comp because you're talking crazy amounts of money. And that will be the fight to the death that the teams and the NCAA will fight to not do the employee-employer relationship.
Does that just come out of the rev share agreement though? Like, say, like, I don't know, like you're going to get X percent, but now we have to factor in the amount of workers' comp that these schools are going to have to be paying. So do we just like lower it to, I don't know, from 30% revenue share to 20% revenue share?
You could. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things that like, it just becomes a whole nother can of worms right now. The state's involved, right? The state is now involved in it. Like, really? it's such a big fight, right? Which is why the NCAA folded like a sack of potato on the NIL thing. Right, they're like, we'll give them this. Right, we'll give them this. Let's not.
We're going to bastardize our entire sport.
It's the Wizard of Oz. Don't pay attention to no one. Pay attention to the man behind the curtain. Right, the man behind the curtain is the workers' comp fund.
Well, I mean, do you think fan bases and donors ever get tired of supplementing basically the schools?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they do. Kev, I see it on. Dude, that's all people complain about on Twitter. Right now,
people hate it.
Yeah. So I mean, like, eventually, like, I mean, is college football a better place if they go to that model than what it is right now?
It's no longer college football.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, it no longer can be even referred to as college football. It is a feeder league for the NFL. You are a professional athlete.
Is it inevitable, though?
I think so.
So
the problem is it's inevitable for the Power Five, but then what? Everyone else that wanted to be a college athlete. I mean, we have tons of friends. I have tons of friends that were good high school players that went and played at Boise or went and played at Wyoming or Mesa or whatever, and played 4 years, got their college paid for, like played college ball, and that was the end of it. If this transfers to this, that's dead.
Fuck them.
That's dead.
Kev, Kev, what's that Dave Chappelle music?
Yeah.
Because fuck them. That's why.
Fuck them. That's why. Right?
I mean, no, I understand what you're saying.
I mean, yeah. And I guess if you open that up, it's got to be like a NCAA wired rule, and then obviously.
But I mean, also, like, I don't know about Iowa, but like for Nebraska, without football, every other sport withers and dies.
Same.
Yep. There's like three profitable school
right. teams. Right. I mean, like men's basketball would survive. Women's volleyball here in Nebraska would survive. Every other sport is dead.
Volleyball.
Zero money.
Volleyball would be just fine, and that's really all
volleyball would be just fine.
Yeah.
Just fine. But like my wife, she was a soccer player at the university. That program's dead, cut. Yeah. Wrestling, dead, cut. Like, so is that worth...
Does Title IX get involved there somehow, though?
You'd have to succeed from the NCAA. That's the only way it couldn't be involved.
The NCAA is going to die at some point. They're going to die.
Like Title IX will forever and always be around unless you say, we are no longer associated with the NCAA. We are now our own entity.
That's what they have to do.
Like, we are the Power Five Football League, whatever you want to call it. But we are no way associated with the NCAA. Well, it's like, well, then how are you still a student?
So next step further, all right, you're an employee of the university. Are you
a student? Do you go are you a student? Do you go to class? Like, it's so messy.
Hey, buddy, I didn't even go to class anyway. Huh?
It's so messy.
Yeah.
Right? And now you're saying, oh, I'm paying this kid $8 million. What are we going to do? Make him ineligible if he doesn't go to school?
No.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many moving pieces that turn into this. And, yeah, do I think it's inevitable and eventually it comes to that? But I hope that they do a lot better infrastructure plan for how that looks besides what they did for NIL, where they're like, sure, figure it out. Right? Like, or else it's just going to be a nightmare situation.
The question that Kevin asked, are you dabbling in the NIL, kind of gets me to my last question. We'll let Grant speak here in a second, maybe. And the shoulder shrug from Grant. How tapped in are you? You know, you're answering 100 million calls. You're recruiting these kids to come to your agency. How tapped in are you to Nebraska football still? Like, do you know anything about this team?
Oh, yeah.
How's Raiola actually doing? Like, what's the squad look like? Is Matt Rhule going to have a 500 ball club this year? What's going
on? You know, so I'm still around. You know, I'm still there's a chance I'm on the broadcast team again next year at some point, which would be great, which would be fun on the radio broadcast. They wanted me to call the game on BTN, the spring game, but it's the draft weekend. So I'm like, yeah, there's a few non-negotiable weekends in my life, friends, and that's one of them. Yeah, I've been to a few practices, and I'll say this. Like, I don't anoint any freshman king ever. I refuse to do it. But the ball coming out of Raiola's hand looks different, right? I've been around dudes in the league that have the arm talent, and his arm talent is definitely there. Now, does that mean he's going to turn into the next Caleb Williams or Patrick Mahomes? No, that doesn't mean that. It means he has the potential to be really, really good. We've made really serious upgrades at the wide receiver position. The kid from Texas and the transfer in from Wake are dudes, which is good because we had way too many white receivers. Just, it was a problem.
A lot of white.
At one point I was calling the Illinois game last year on the radio, and it was a TV timeout. And I looked down, I looked at my co-host. I was like, you want to know the problem? He goes, well, I go, we have 10 white guys on the field right now. And I go, if we are on offense. I go, look at their defense. Tell me how many white guys you see. He goes, zero. I go, exactly. It's a problem. Like, just, we're going to get out athleted.
Yeah.
And we did. Right. And so we went in, we made a good point of getting some dudes. Everyone on the defense besides like one or two guys is back, which was the strong point of our team last year.
Yep.
Right. So I think that, you know, we have a capable quarterback that can throw the football. We give ourselves a chance to be a 6-6 ball club next year. Right. And that's, the schedule sets up nicely for us. Right. We have a good start to the schedule. We only got to go out west once to USC. Right. UCLA's got to come to us. Like, we've got a good schedule to lay out. But if it doesn't happen this year, the schedule gets real tough for everyone. I mean, there's never going to be an easy schedule in the Big Ten ever again.
Yeah, it's
like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what Washington is now. I mean, with the shell themselves, I mean, we stole their athletic director.
They're not good. I don't think they'll be very good.
They got once that coach left, it was open season,
which is nice because when they were good, it was even more of a like, wow, we're getting USC, Washington, Oregon. Like, at least now it's for a second, Washington's just another average team in the Big Ten.
I mean, you throw them in the realm of Indiana, Purdue, Rutgers, right? Like Nebraska, like in that realm. But I mean, if you would have said that coach would have stayed, they would have came in. You're now talking them more being closer to the Michigans, the Iowas, the Ohio State tier
for sure.
Yeah, the Ohio State tier. But I mean, I'm fascinated to see what some of these Pac-12 schools do. In the
Big Ten. Interesting.
It's going to be fascinating to see.
I'm most interested to see what their home versus away records look like.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, I think about like Iowa, Nebraska, late November. It's freezing cold. And but vice versa.
Give me Caleb Williams on November 26th.
But vice versa, you send him out to LA and it's 90 degrees. It's 85 degrees. And like, that shit's not easy. No. I remember Buffalo, we went down and played Miami like December 20th. And I started that game and I thought I was going to die.
You're having a stroke.
The blood's thick, right? There's 18 inches of snow back home. And you go down there and you're doing warm-ups and you're like, I'm not going
to make it. It usually takes at least 2 days.
Not going to make it. And now, if you're playing SC, you're going to need to fly out there. If you're Penn State, you're Michigan, like you're going to have to fly out there 2 days early. You're going to have to leave on Thursday.
Yeah.
Right? And you're not going to get home till the wee hours of the morning, Sunday morning. Or maybe even Sunday afternoon. Like, that's the part that's going to suck for the whole thing. But we don't care about that anymore because we don't play.
We don't play. And
TV's still on
now, so fuck them.
Yeah. Fuck them. That's why.
That's going to be the title of this podcast.
Yeah.
Fuck
them. I love it.
Grant, do you have any questions for this man? Anything?
What do you got?
Anything popping in your mind?
No, I'm curious. As an agent right now, how do you approach the UFL? Is that even on your mind? Obviously, it's the goal for these guys is get them all in the NFL, right? But I know you even said, like, there's one guy in your four, like, we don't know if he gets drafted or not. Is there any conversation going on where it's like, well, we think we might be able to get you on, like, the Arlington?
For sure. Yeah, I got two UFL guys right now. Adrian Martinez is our client, right? And so he just lit it up for the Birmingham Stallions, starting quarterback for them. Austin Allen, tight end, he's on the Roughnecks. Right. So I love the USL. I think it's great. I think the merge of the USFL and the XFL was a great idea.
I mean, there's no way both were going to survive. Right?
No. And also the football was terrible because there was too many good players spread out.
Yeah.
Right. There's not enough good players to have two good leagues. You needed to cut down some teams, put the good players all into a one league and make them all legitimately have a chance. And so I like the way they did that. And so, we use the UFL. I'd rather have them go there than Canada, because if you go to Canada, you're locked into a 2-year deal no matter what. Right here, they're very like, hey, we understand what this is. You get 1-year deals. If you go to the NFL after your 1 year, your contract immediately is terminated. If you're on a 2-year deal and an NFL team wants you, your contract goes on hold. If it doesn't work out, we'll take you right back at the end of it. Right. So I love what they've done. I think that they put a good quality product together. Like, I've watched some of these games. There's some good games. There's some good football players in that league. I mean, shoot, dude, you're watching Taco Charlton, who was a first round pick at one point out there rushing the passer still. Right. Matt Corral. Like, there's a ton of guys in the NFL that you thought would make it that are there. And there's going to be a lot of guys that get a chance. There's going to be a lot of guys that end up in a camp from the UFL this year.
Nice.
Love it. You got any insight information on what's all going to happen at the first round of the draft? Are the Bears taking Caleb Williams? Or,
I mean, I do a ton of Vikings pods, so I've done about enough quarterback breakdowns to make your head spin. But yeah, it's got to be Caleb. You can't, mostly because it's the Bears, right? If it was any other team, you could maybe say it, but like, the Bears live in this purgatory of you could have drafted Patrick Mahomes and you didn't. Right. And so they decide to pass on Caleb Williams for whatever reason. And then all of a sudden he comes out there and becomes a stud. Then they look at the team that passed on the generational quarterback twice. Yeah. Right. And they can't afford that.
I mean, they're the Bears. They're probably just whatever choice they make is probably going to be the wrong one.
Yeah. I mean, I think it very much goes Caleb Williams one, Drake May two. I could see the Vikings making a push to three to maybe try and get Jaden Daniels. I think it's more likely the Vikings make a push to three with a King's ransom if Drake May's there. Right. If for whatever reason the Commanders take Jaden Daniels and Drake May sitting at three, I could see the Vikings trying to make a huge push for the Patriots because the Patriots are not a quarterback away. Like, they need a ton of help. And so why not trade back, accumulate picks, and build your team? I see that being a very realistic scenario. But, you know, the guy that I don't love and everyone's in love with is JJ McCarthy. I don't see it. I don't think he's a top 10 worthy pick. I think he's going to be a decent quarterback in the league, but I don't think he's the guy.
Are any of those other three guys you think being over, you know, I feel like quarterback in general is like an over, I mean, it's hard to say that because it's obviously.
I personally think Penix is going to have the best career out of all of them.
Hell yeah.
I saw that clip that you guys put out on him. I mean, guy throws a good ball.
Dude throws a great ball, and dude, he's the most accurate quarterback in the class. And with accuracy in the NFL is king. Dude, accuracy is king. You have to put the ball in tight windows. You have to be able to do it. If he didn't have the injury history, right, the ACLs, the shoulders, the missing full seasons, he's up there in the conversation with those guys, right? But he's also old, right? He's his sixth-year guy, right, versus him or Caleb Williams. But, you know, it's going to be fascinating. I think there's eight offensive linemen taken in the first round this year. Like, I really do. I think there's eight of them that go.
Machine at five.
Yeah, that's a little rich.
He's a Bronco.
You know, I think Cooper does go first. I think he does go first round.
I've seen like in the 20 to 25.
Yeah, range. I would say late first. You know, I think he goes late first. But yeah, I think it's going to be a historic. I think the first, I'd say 18 of the first 25 picks are offensive players.
Wow.
Jeez. It's a very heavy offense. I mean, between offensive linemen, receivers,
like a handful of good receivers in the class.
Yeah, offensive linemen, receivers, and quarterbacks. I think, yeah, probably 18 of the first 25, which then says that there's going to be a big run on defensive players late first, early second.
But do you think like some of these quarterbacks like overdrafted, like maybe teams like believe they're one quarterback away, but we're like, all right, you know, is Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy, is he the guy that's going to turn our franchise around, or can we wait another year? Can we take a sure thing that we know Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a fucking stud in the league for the next 10 years?
You can, but you run the risk of getting fired, right? Like, if you pass on those dudes.
Yeah, the Packers did it for years. They didn't.
The Packers have had three quarterbacks since 1995. Like, that doesn't happen. That's an anomaly. Oh, you went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. Now Jordan Love looks like he's going to be a really good quarterback for a long time. Like,
I'm in that mindset. We've been spoiled as well. We've only had two head coaches in like 400 years.
I don't ever use the Packers as a comparison, okay. Right? Like, that's just not fair. Like, you don't just get Hall of Fame quarterbacks that fall into your lap 3 years in a row. And I'm not saying Jordan Love's a Hall of Fame quarterback, but after what he did on the back half of last year,
I think he might be decent.
Pretty damn impressive what he did at the end of the last year.
I mean, but does that, you know, kind of lead into the argument? It's like, hey, take a guy late first round, let him sit for a year or two.
I would love that. I think that that's the recipe for success.
Right? I mean, like,
I agree. But like, if you're the Vikings, right, you paid Sam Darnold $10 million and you bring him in and you draft McCarthy or Drake May or Penix or whoever, you guys know how it goes. All of a sudden you're sitting there and you're 3-8 and the owner calls and is like, hey, I was really excited on draft night. I want to see the young cat. Okay. Right. Like, and you got to throw him out there. And I mean, that's part of the risk that you run, but I agree. Yeah. I wish it was okay to draft a first round quarterback and let him sit, but that is just not the world we live in the NFL with coaches turnover every 2 years. And we just don't give coaches long enough in the NFL.
Oh, we've talked about that.
Makes sense though, because we know like Patrick Mahomes sat for a year and then immediately year two started destroying the entire NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Love sat for multiple years and then had the time to learn what it actually became. And it's hard to transition.
Especially like it's not quarterback, man. That's so hard to go from college to NFL.
Especially like the systems that they're in now. Now, I think it's going to maybe change a little bit with the earphones going in the quarterback's ears in college. Mm. Right, that might change things a little bit. But I also think it's going to weed out some kids that you're like, oh, nah, you can't handle this.
Yeah,
like you can't handle someone yapping in your ear.
True. Yeah. I don't know. What do I turned my back on coaching a long time ago.
Yeah, I never would have gotten into it. Couldn't handle it.
Definitely can't handle it now.
Kids are soft. 95 minutes of the one and only.
I love it.
Jeremiah Searles.
Flies by.
Dude, you're the best guest we have.
Hey, I love it. You know, anytime I come on, it's always a good time. And we'll obviously regroup on Nebraska week. But we'll definitely do one before then too. We got to get a preseason in here. See what we think the old Hawks and Huskers look like running into the 24 season.
We could do that. We could do a little. We'll
280 pound quarterback.
No. We have Cade back.
It's a strong 280.
Yeah, it's a solid 280.
Yeah, you don't want to go to a Pizza Hut with him.
He's so fat.
We will definitely get one on the books for like a little like Big Ten preseason.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
But thanks for coming on.
Of course. Tell Drake I love him.
We will. Everybody, thank you for listening. The fans are going to love this that we went an hour 35 with you. And we'll talk to you next time.
The O-Line show.
Plug the O-Line.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we do the O-Line committee every Tuesday. It's myself, Alex Boone, Phil Mackey, O-Line Lifestyle Podcast. It's very similar vibe to this, which is couple idiots sitting there talking about their life and what we did in the NFL for 15 years combined, and then
we do a film. Talk about tape though.
And then we break down tape, we break down film. We did a O-line masterclass in blitz protection this morning, which showed like, hey, what we identify, how we look at it, what do you see, safety rotation, all that fun stuff, and break down relevant stuff, CJ Stroud, Jordan Love, and all that fun stuff. So if you like tape, if you're a football loving freak like the rest of us, go check out O-Line Committee on YouTube. Also check us out Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all that fun stuff that I don't run.
And I hate them because they get the all 22 film, which is bullshit.
Gotta know a guy to know a guy.
We'll talk to everybody next time. Jeremiah Searles.
Love you all.
Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washeduplawkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.